The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Part 2, The Yoga of Integral Knowledge. Chapter 22 continues, Vijnana or Gnosis. Page 480, mid-page. It is possible to cultivate and extend the use of the intuitive mind in proportion as we rely less predominantly upon the reasoning intelligence. We may train our mentality not to seize, as it does now, upon every separate flash of intuitive illumination for its own inferior purposes, not to precipitate our thought at once into a crystallizing intellectual action around it. We can train it to think in a stream of successive and connected intuitions, to pour light upon light in a brilliant and triumphant series. We shall succeed in this difficult change in proportion as we purify the interfering intelligence. If we can reduce in it the element of material thought enslaved to the external appearances of things, the element of vital thought enslaved to the wishes, desires, impulses of the lower nature, the element of intellectual thought enslaved to our preferred, already settled or congenial ideas, conceptions, opinions, fixed operations of intelligence, if, having reduced to a minimum those elements, we can replace them by an intuitive vision and sense of things, an intuitive insight into appearances, an intuitive will, and intuitive ideation. This is hard enough for our consciousness, naturally bound by the triple tie of mentality, vitality, corporeality to its own imperfection and ignorance. The upper, middle, and lower cord in the Vedic parable of the soul's bondage, cords of the mixed truth and falsehood of appearances, by which Shunashepa was bound to the post of sacrifice. But even if this difficult thing were perfectly accomplished, still the intuition would not be the gnosis. It would only be its thin prolongation into mind, or its sharp edge of first entrance. The difference, not easy to define except by symbols, may be expressed if we take the Vedic image, in which the sun represents the gnosis and the sky, mid-air, and earth the mentality, vitality, physicality of man and of the universe. Living on the earth, climbing into the mid-air, or even winging in the sky, the mental being, the Manomaya Purusha, would still live in the rays of the sun, and not in its bodily light. And in those rays he would see things not as they are, but as reflected in his organ of vision, deformed by its faults, or limited in their truth by its restrictions. But the Vijnanamaya Purusha lives in the sun itself, in the very body and blaze of the true light. So the sun is called in the Veda, Ritam Jyoti. He knows this light to be his own self-luminous being, and he sees besides all that dwells in the rays of the sun, sees the whole truth of the lower triplicity, and each thing that is in it. He sees it not by reflection in a mental organ of vision, but with the sun of gnosis itself as his eye. For the sun, says the Veda, is the eye of the gods. The mental being, even in the intuitive mind, can perceive the truth only by a brilliant reflection or limited communication and subject to the restrictions and the inferior capacity of the mental vision. But the supramental being sees it by the gnosis itself. From the very center and outwelling fount of the truth, in its very form and by its own spontaneous and self-illumining process. For the Vijnana is a direct and divine, as opposed to an indirect and human knowledge. The nature of the gnosis can only be indicated to the intellect by contrasting it with the nature of the intellect. And even then, the phrases we must use cannot illuminate unless aided by some amount of actual experience. For what language forged by the reason can express the supra-rational? Fundamentally, this is the difference between these two powers, that the mental reason proceeds with labor from ignorance to truth. But the gnosis has in itself the direct contact, the immediate vision, the easy and constant possession of the truth, and has no need of seeking or any kind of procedure. The reason starts with appearances and labors, never or seldom losing at least a partial dependence on appearances to arrive at the truth behind them. It shows the truth in the light of the appearances. The gnosis starts from the truth and shows the appearances in the light of the truth. It is itself the body of the truth and its spirit. The reason proceeds by inference. It concludes. But the gnosis proceeds by identity or vision. It is, sees, and knows. As directly as the physical vision sees and grasps the appearance of objects, so, and far more directly, the gnosis sees and grasps the truth of things. But where the physical sense gets into relation with objects, by a veiled contact, the gnosis gets into identity with things by an unveiled oneness. Thus, it is able to know all things as a man knows his own existence, simply, convincingly, directly. To the reason, only what the senses give is direct knowledge, pratyaksha. The rest of truth is arrived at indirectly. To the gnosis, all its truth is direct knowledge, pratyaksha. Therefore, the truth gained by the intellect is an acquisition over which there hangs always a certain shadow of doubt, an incompleteness, a surrounding penumbra of night and ignorance or half-knowledge, a possibility of alteration or annihilation by farther knowledge. The truth of the gnosis is free from doubt, self-evident, self-existent, irrefragable, absolute. The reason has as its first instrument observation general, analytical and synthetic. It aids itself by comparison, contrast and analogy. Proceeds from experience to indirect knowledge by logical processes of deduction, induction, all kinds of inference, rests upon memory, reaches out beyond itself by imagination, secures itself by judgment. All is a process of groping and seeking. The gnosis does not seek, it possesses. Or if it has to enlighten, it does not even then seek. It reveals, it illumines. inner consciousness, transmuted from intelligence to gnosis, imagination would be replaced by truth inspiration. Mental judgment would give place to a self-luminous discerning. The slow and stumbling logical process from reasoning to conclusion would be pushed out by a swift intuitive proceeding. The conclusion or fact would be seen at once in its own right by its own self-sufficient witness. And all the evidence by which we arrive at, it would be seen to at once, along with it, in the same comprehensive figure. Not as its evidence, but as its intimate conditions, connections, and relations. Its constituent parts, or its wings of circumstance. Mental and sense observation would be changed into an inner vision using the instruments as channels, but not dependent on them as the mind in us is blind and deaf without the physical senses. And this vision would see not merely the thing, but all its truth, its forces, powers, the eternities within it. Our uncertain memory would fall away, and there would come in its place a luminous possession of knowledge, the divine memory that is not a store of acquisition, but holds all things always contained in the consciousness. A memory at once of past, present, and future. For while the reason proceeds from moment to moment of time, and loses and acquires, and again loses and again acquires, the gnosis dominates time in a one view and perpetual power, and links past, present, and future in their indivisible connections, in a single continuous map of knowledge, side by side. The gnosis starts from the totality which it immediately possesses. It sees parts, groups, and details only in relation to the totality and in one vision with it. The mental reason cannot really see the totality at all and does not know fully any whole except by starting from an analysis and synthesis of its parts, masses, and details. Otherwise, its whole view is always a vague apprehension, or an imperfect comprehension, or a confused summary of indistinct features. The reason deals with constituents and processes and properties. It tries in vain to form by them an idea of the thing in itself, its reality, its essence. But the gnosis sees the thing in itself first, penetrates to its original and eternal nature, adjoins its processes and properties only as a self-expression of its nature. The reason dwells in the diversity and is its prisoner. It deals with things separately and treats each as a separate existence, as it deals with sections of time and divisions of space. It sees unity only in a sum or by elimination of diversity or as a general conception and a vacant figure. But the gnosis dwells in the unity and knows by it all the nature of the diversities. It starts from the unity and sees diversities only of a unity, not diversities constituent. Oops. Not diversities constituting the one, but a unity constituting its own multitudes. The Gnostic knowledge. The Gnostic sense does not recognize any real division. It does not treat things separately as if they were independent of their true and original oneness. The reason deals with the finite and is helpless before the infinite. It can conceive of it as an indefinite extension in which the finite acts. But the infinite in itself, it can with difficulty conceive and cannot at all grasp or penetrate. But the Gnosis is, sees, and lives in the infinite. It starts always from the infinite and knows finite things only in their relation to the infinite and in the sense of the infinite. If we would describe the Gnosis as it is in its own awareness, not thus imperfectly, as it is to us in contrast with our own reason and intelligence, it is hardly possible to speak of it, except in figures and symbols. And first we must remember that the Gnostic level, Mahat, Vijnana, is not the supreme plane of our consciousness, but a middle or link plane. Interposed between the triune glory of the utter spirit, the infinite existence, consciousness and bliss of the eternal, and our lower triple being and nature, it is as if it stood there as the mediating, formulating, organizing, and creative wisdom, power, and joy of the eternal. In the Gnosis, Satchidananda gathers up the light of his unseizable existence and pours it out on the soul in the shape and power of a divine knowledge, a divine will, and a divine bliss of existence. It is as if infinite light were gathered up into the compact orb of the sun and lavished on all that depends upon the sun in radiances that continue forever. But the Gnosis is not only light. It is force. It is creative knowledge. It is the self-effective truth of the divine idea. This idea is not creative imagination, not something that constructs in a void, but light and power of eternal substance. Truth light, full of truth force. And it brings out what is latent in being. It does not create a fiction that never was in being. The ideation of the Gnosis is radiating light stuff of the consciousness of the eternal existence. Each ray is a truth. The will in the Gnosis is a conscious force of eternal knowledge. It throws the consciousness and substance of being into infallible forms of truth power, forms that embody the idea and make it faultlessly effective. And it works out each truth power and each truth form spontaneously and rightly according to its nature. Because it carries this creative force of the divine idea, the sun, the lord and symbol of the Gnosis, is described in the Veda as the light, which is the father of all things, Surya Savitri, the wisdom luminous, who is the bringer out into manifest existence. This creation is inspired by the divine delight, the eternal Ananda. It is full of the joy of its own truth and power. It creates in bliss, creates out of bliss, creates that which is blissful. Therefore, the world of the gnosis, the supramental world, is the true and the happy creation, Ritam, Bhadram, since all in it shares in the perfect joy that made it. A divine radiance of undeviating knowledge, a divine power of unfaltering will, and a divine ease of unstumbling bliss are the nature or prakriti of the soul in supermind, in vijnana. The stuff of the Gnostic or supramental plane is made of the perfect absolutes of all that is here imperfect and relative, and its movement of the reconciled interlockings and happy fusion of all that here are opposites. For behind the appearance of these opposites are their truths, and the truths of the eternal are not in conflict with each other. Our minds and life's opposites, transformed in the supermind into their own true spirit, link together, and are seen as tones and colorings of an eternal reality and everlasting ananda. Supermind, or gnosis, is the supreme truth, the supreme thought, the supreme word, the supreme sight, the supreme will idea. It is the inner and outer extension of the infinite, who is beyond space, the unfettered time of the eternal, who is timeless, the supernal harmony of all absolutes, of the absolute. To the envisaging mind, there are three powers of the Vijnana. Its supreme power knows and receives into it from above all the infinite existence, consciousness, and bliss of the Ishvara. It is, in its highest height, the absolute knowledge and force of eternal Satchidananda. Its second power concentrates the infinite into a dense, luminous consciousness. Kaitanya Gana, or Chidgana, the seed state of the divine consciousness in which are contained living and concrete all the immutable principles of the divine being and all the inviolable truths of the divine conscious idea and nature. Its third power brings or looses out these things by the effective ideation, vision, authentic identities of the divine knowledge, movement of the divine will force, vibration of the divine delight intensities into a universal harmony, an illimitable diversity, a manifold rhythm of their powers, forms, and interplay of living consequences. The mental Purusha, rising into the Vijnanamaya, must ascend into these three powers. It must turn, by conversion of its movements, into the movements of the gnosis, its mental perception, ideation, will, pleasure, into radiances of the divine knowledge, pulsations of the divine will force, waves and floods of the divine delight seas. It must convert its conscious stuff of mental nature into the Chidgana, or dense self-luminous consciousness. It must transform its conscious substance into a Gnostic self, or truth self, of infinite Satchidananda. These three movements are described in the Isha Upanishad. The first is Vyuha, the marshalling of the rays of the sun of Gnosis in the order of the truth consciousness. The second is Samuha, the gathering together of the rays into the body of the sun of Gnosis. Third, as the vision of that sun's fairest form of all, in which the soul most intimately possesses its oneness with the infinite Purusha. The Veda describes the Vijñāna plane as Ritam Satyam Brihat, the right truth vast, the same triple idea differently expressed. Ritam is the action of the divine knowledge, will and joy, in the lines of the truth, the play of the truth consciousness. Satyam is the truth of being which so acts, the dynamic essence of the truth consciousness. Brihat is the infinity of Satchidananda, out of which the other two proceed, and in which they are founded. The Supreme above, in him, around, everywhere, and the soul dwelling in the Supreme and one with it, the infinite power and truth of the divine, concentrated in his own concentrated luminous soul nature, a radiant activity of the divine knowledge, will, and joy, perfect in the natural action of the Prakriti. This is the fundamental experience of the mental being transformed and fulfilled and sublimated in the perfection of the Gnosis. End of chapter 22, page 487.